Yo, this is M1 from Dead Press.
Hey, what's up? This is Boots from The Coup.
Nah, I mean, telling you to stay tuned to Hard Knock Radio.
Keep it locked.
On the move, this is Pam Africa on Hard Knock Radio, the station of resistance. Down with this rotten-ass system.
Yo, check this out. Hard Knock Radio coming at you, bringing the noise. This is Chuck D, Public Enemy number one. News, views, and hip-hop.
I'm Eddie Zane.
And I'm Helen Zia.
And we are on Hard Knock Radio.
What's up, folks? This is your girl Femi representing the whole Bay Area. I'm here on Hard Knock Radio, news, views, and hip-hop. Stay tuned.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. And as we noted, since the beginning of the year, we've been talking with movers, shakers, pioneers, and folks who have had a big impact on this culture in music that we love called hip-hop. Celebrating 50 years is what's been going on, and we've been using that as an excuse to talk to friends and, you know, pioneers and other folks and get their history and share it with you all. And one person whose name keeps coming up all the time, whether we're at meetings or gatherings, is the one and only Dominique DePrima. Many people know you, Dominique, for your work in Los Angeles, which is made a lot of noise, you know, initially with The Beat. People forget that you was with 92.3 The Beat, you know, doing a show called Street Science, which led to me being able to do a show up here called Street Knowledge. So you put the gauntlet down there and that opened up the doors up here. Then you were with Stevie Wonder Station, KGLH. Yeah. And you were doing a show for a number of years called Front Page. And I remember you would sometimes have us on as guests, and we always had to get up at 4 a.m, you know. But you did that for a number of years, and then you got tapped by Tavis Smiley to head up his station, KBLA, in Los Angeles, where you're the, you know, the main person, the morning. But congratulations, all that, and you got a bunch of awards, you know, but many of us who know Dominique DePrima when she was in the Bay knew that you opened up a lot of doors with a little show called Home Turf, you know, that came on Channel 4. And I don't know anybody who's a pioneering figure in the Bay who cannot say that they got that very important exposure with a show that was one of a kind. And that's not even the rest of your history, because you started out as a rapper in New York. So, but we got to talk about the Home Turf show, because that's something that's almost been erased from history. And we're glad to have you and indulging us to walk down memory lane, because that was a big deal.
What we're going to do right here is go back, way back, back into time.
Once again on the Saturday airwaves, it's all that. Today's turf is definitely going on. I'm Dominique, your TV MC, and HT is doing damage Bay Area wide. We'll kick some flavor on the streets of San Francisco at this week's Place to Be. Kid Frost will drop some science for you at the RICO First Annual Oaktown Latino Youth Conference, and we'll bring you state championship high school basketball action. But we're going to start off hitting hard with the rap artist who's definitely stood the test of time. From the first time we saw him in Crush Groove back in the day, singing about his radio, to his smash single Bad, LL Cool J is definitely a major force in hip-hop. And just when some people thought he was played out, he's back with a slamming new album. But don't call it a comeback. LL Cool J is gonna knock you out. Come on.
Yeah, well, just for the record, since you say rapper in New York, I was visiting New York because I grew up in the Bay.
You grew up in the Bay.
Okay.
York
with my mom to visit, and that's where I discovered hip hop. It's not that I'm from New York. I'm from the Bay. Then when I came back, it was happening in the Bay. I just didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
So it took me going out to New York, to the Lower East Side, to discover hip hop in Alphabet City, even though I was living in San Francisco at the time.
Okay. So let me ask you this. When did Home Turf come about? And for people who don't know, let's give them a Home Turf 101.
Well, Home Turf was a show that started in the 80s, actually. And it wasn't started by me. It was started by a man named John Fromer, may he rest in peace, mm-hmm. who was a labor activist, actually a communist, and a brilliant producer. He did work for KRON-TV for many, many years, along with an incredible department. They had a children's programming department there that was award-winning with Chris Metcalf and Chris Prey. They did the show Buster and Me. Old heads from the Bay may remember Buster and Me, Get Box Tickle. All of this programming, which was actually very progressive and very enriching for young people, that came about as a result of the activism of parents. So Home Turf was the next in that line of shows.
Okay.
And John saw me actually at a play. I was doing a play by a group called Teatro Latino.
Mm-hmm.
I was rapping in that play.
Okay.
So he asked me to come and audition for Home Turf. And so I didn't create the show, but I definitely, I had some influence on it, just being part of it, and given the fact that they were very progressive people, all of the producers. So they were always like, well, what do you think? What's your idea? What, why don't you produce a segment? Why don't you write a segment, edit a segment, and so on.
Right. So a communist labor organizer, John Farmer, was the one that Farmer started that. I remember John, because
John is a great guy. He was like a mentor to me.
And he would turn up, if you was on some exploitation thing. I seen him, it's like, wait a second, I know you from Home Turf, but he was a fiery individual was.
And John had a strong belief in letting young people speak for themselves rather than trying to process them or show them in a certain light. And I think that's what made Home Turf so special, because it captured hip hop and other youth culture in a very respectful way. And this is long before Yo MTV Raps or 106 and Park or any of that stuff. No one had ever even thought of any of that stuff. Hip hop was considered very underground. And I remember every year they used to ask us, when is this rap thing going to go out of style? Because maybe we should pivot away from it on the show.
How was John able to, and how were you or John able to withstand that type of critique? Because when we're talking about the 80s, we are talking about the fact that many people were reluctant. Because we're talking about the reason why Home Turf was so important was because radio wasn't playing it. There was us on the underground, the college stations, Calix, KPOO, and KVSU, and Kevin, and later down at San Jose State. But, the commercial outlets, they brag, we don't play this rap stuff. So you were probably one of the first mainstream outlets that we had, definitely in the Bay. Yeah. And now we're starting to find out in many places around the country that, that was mainstream like that.
Because Home Turf was on the NBC affiliate, KRON-TV. Right. It doesn't get much more mainstream than that. I believe it's because John Fromer and Christina Metcalf and Chris Prey, that whole unit, I mean, there were a lot of other folks. I feel like I should be giving credit to a whole lot of people that worked on the show, that they had such a good track record. They had won so many Emmy Awards and so many other kinds of accolades, Iris Awards and Parents' Choice and this, that, and the other, that they had earned a certain amount of latitude within that station.
Mm.
And the thing about Home Turf is that it did start to bring home those Emmy Awards pretty early on in its tenure.
So you won some Emmys. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I have five of them actually, but John had like dozens. I mean, his and Christina too. Like their shelves are full of Emmys. But I got five. I got one for writer, two for producer, and two for talent.
Mm.
And a crazy thing, David, when I won my first Emmy, which was for talent, I was going up against news people, you know, your local news folks.
Right.
And when my name was called, you literally heard someone go, "Who?" And then you heard my brother go, "Yeah!" Like he was at a Niner game.
Right.
And then, after that, they changed the rules so that if you were a non-news person, you could no longer compete with news programming. So I felt
really
honored by that because I felt like they changed the rules because they didn't want to get beat by some little hip hop person from out of nowhere.
That's crazy. You know, if you're saying that because it's the 80s and yeah. because you're a woman, you right. know, that was breaking down doors, it reminds me because you won this in the 80s, right? The
yes, Emmy, sir.
Right? Mm-hmm. So around this time, there's a woman named Roxanne Shanté. She's like,
I love Roxanne Shanté.
So for people who don't know, she's like 17 years old and she's at, remember the New Music Seminar mm-hmm. that they used to have in New York?
Yeah.
So they changed the rules and they have her go, you know, they don't put her in a bracket. They just keep having her go and challenge everybody. And she beats one MC after the next, right? All the way up to, I want to say it was Fuquan from Stetsasonic. And she waxes him, right? You know, she's just this, you know, little girl. She's a teenager, right? And she's beating them. And she gets into the finals. And I think it's either she's going up against Busy Bee or somebody. But the moral of the story is that she won. I remember this. She wins. Everybody cheers. But Curtis Blow gives her a 4 so instead of a 10. And so with his judgment, you know, him judging that way, she wound up losing, even though the crowd didn't like that. And so, ooh. You know, so years later, you know, Curtis like said, tells her because she confronts him about it. She goes, I had to do this because hip hop was on the main stage and we couldn't have the face of hip hop be some teenage girl with braces, you know? So he changed the rules. It was crazy. But I only say that to say that here you come doing your A game as she probably within a year of each other is doing her A game. And then people like, oh, we can't have, you know, these little hip hop girls, you know, be the face. But right. both of you in your own right open doors. There's no Nas, there's no a whole bunch of people out of Queensbridge without Roxanne Shanté. And there's not a whole lot of people like us, you know, who were able to come through and get that exposure through home turf. So that's crazy that they changed the rules.
The thing about that, Davey D, that story is that I was so inspired by Roxanne Shanté because I just felt like she was fearless and she was like, she was willing to put people in their place. She had her own style. She wasn't catering to anybody. And I was like, to me, you know, that was like my inspiration, being on TV or whatever. I would be rapping. People like her were the ones that make me go, yeah, why can't I do it?
Right.
Because, you know, the original host for Home Turf was supposed to be Too Short.
Wait. Are you serious? I never knew that.
They were talking to Too Short. Short Dog was, they had gone and filmed with him in Oakland. When
he's never said this.
Of course he wouldn't say. there, that footage is there somewhere. It's him in his mom's garage making
okay.
tapes. And I think the feeling was that he just cursed a lot and it might be difficult for like a network television show.
But he didn't curse in the audition, did he?
I presumably, yeah. Not sure because I wasn't there.
Right.
I auditioned after him. But I think, you know, thanks to him having this amazing rap career and not really needing Home Turf, I got my first break.
did you bring Short on Home Turf? You had everybody
oh, yeah,
on.
He was on. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He was on more than once.
Okay.
Yeah. And he always gave us love. I mean, there was no hard feelings. He was on a mission, but it's just a funny thing because it could have gone a different way.
Okay, I'm gonna have to go back and listen to all my Too Short albums and see if he took subliminal shots at you. You know, there might
no,
be
never,
like
never, no, no, Short Dog never. He was always like really cool with me.
Okay,
those ones. he was one of the people, which it's so ironic, Davey D, because people talk about misogyny, sexism in hip hop, which exists just like the rest of the entertainment industry. But it's funny because the people that you would think would be the most misogynistic have actually been the most supportive for me personally in my journey.
Right.
When I came to LA, Eazy-E helped me more than anybody. You know,
right.
When I was in the Bay, you know, like Too Short was hella supportive. He was always really respectful and kind. And when I saw him down here, same thing. So I just, you know, you got to judge people by their actions, not their images.
Right. Let me ask you this. We're talking with Dominique DePrima, Bay Area legend. Many of us know her for the work that she does in LA, where she's at. I'm talking about this history of a show called Home Turf. You broke some ground when you brought many people on. Some of the dance crews, some of the you know, vibrant dance crews got, you know, their exposure. A lot of the artists, you know, like you said, Too Short and others. Who are some of the ones that stood out for you that you've been like, you know what, thank God we were able to do that, or they came on and you had no idea that they would blow up the way that they did? Anybody stand out?
I mean, there's so many people over the years. I think I feel really proud that we showcased a lot of DJs and graffiti crews when, you know, they were, I mean, even when hip hop started to slowly break into the mainstream, it took forever until they featured all of the culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, people like Q-Bert, people like you, you know, just different DJs and crews that were on the show over the years. I think, you know, obviously E-40, you know, I don't know that I would have imagined he would be such a huge star.
Right.
Because he
getting,
was just
getting kicked out of the NBA playoffs and making national news.
Like, yeah, right. But now he's like a dignitary, right? He gets escorted out by players and stuff like, you know, it's really hard to remember that back then we didn't have that kind of clout in hip hop.
Right.
You couldn't even get on, like you said, on the radio or TV. That was weird. It's one of the reasons why Home Turf is so popular. It's like, wait, what was that I just saw?
Right.
You know, Tupac was never officially on Home Turf. He was on a special we did called Listen Up.
Oh, I remember that. Okay.
Yeah. So, but I mean, you know, and I kind of knew him just like we all did from being around digital, but the way he dealt with the medium of television stood out because he had the phones ringing at KR1 TV. He created a whole like drama
in
maybe, you know, 1 minute interview.
Right.
I had never seen someone create so much.
What did he say he was asked about?
Dissing Hammer. That's what.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, he was dissing Hammer. Then Hammer got mad at me and he got mad at KRON and people were calling in and the station, you know, was not ready for it. It was just like a little preview of coming attractions, I think, with him.
Right.
You know, of course, you know, conscious people, some because they were amazing and some because they were not as conscious as I thought they were. Once I interviewed them, I was like, oh, okay.
Right. We won't put anybody on blast.
So it's just an act. Yeah, we won't. Well, you have to wait for my book for that.
Right.
Davey D, how many books you got out now?
Just that one. Can't Stop, Won't Stop.
Oh, just the one.
But I've been featured in about 12.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. So I've had my writing credits here and there. You know, a forward here, a chapter here.
You're a real hip hop historian. For me, I consider myself more like a hip hop Forrest Gump. It's like I love hip hop and I just go along living my life and I just end up being at the right place at the right time because apparently I'm meant to be part of this culture and
right.
So I don't, you know, you can say back in 1776, you know, MC so-and-so invented the such and such. Like, I'm not that girl.
Right.
But was I there? Yes.
Yeah. Sure. But that's also why you also had me on a couple of times that I was there to provide that. But let me ask you this, you know, As we're looking at this 50th anniversary of hip hop, a lot of attention is now being paid to the times that came before it, right? So we're looking at the artistic movements, all the other things. So now, you know, for people who don't know, your father is, you know, was a Mary Baraka, you know, founder of the Black Arts Movement, where now people are looking and go, wait a second, these folks did all this spoken word and blah, 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 right? So people are kind of rediscovering, or for the first time discovering, that history. And, you know, and your mom was a poet as well.
Yes.
So did any, you know, not Dominique, Diana DePrima, right? How much did, you know, first of all, did you realize the connection? Did you make that connection between hip hop and, say, the Black Arts Movement and the beat poets and all that early on, or did that come later? And was there any influence, you know, from either parent in terms of how you maybe looked at the art or approached it or even incorporated it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, both my parents are poets. And I grew up around so much poetry. You know, I was always at a poetry reading. But also the intersection, the way that politics and movements are fueled by art, that is something I definitely learned from my parents. They consciously taught that to me, and I received it, and I've incorporated it into every single thing I did. Mm. I don't know that I put it together in the way that you're saying, like this big intellectual light bulb moment. But the fact that I learned about hip hop at the New Eureka Poets Cafe, why was I there? Because my parents were going there to do poetry readings.
Uh-huh.
And somehow I got finagled my way as a very young teenager into being able to stay in a club that I probably shouldn't have been at because they didn't serve food and they had a bar.
Right.
But in between the, you know, the hustle dancing and poetry, there was break dancing and people rapping with an open mic. That's what made me decide, oh, well, let me try this. You know, I would never have considered myself a poet because my parents are these amazing, iconic poets. But rap seemed like something I could do that they wouldn't.
Right.
And so that's what opened the door to that whole world for me. And it was logical for me because I had always seen people getting on the mic and just.
So let me ask you this, though. Many parents who when we were coming up, you know, my parents included, was like, what the hell are you doing? You know, that was their question. You know, moms was like, you turn your hat around, you know, you don't come down to the job doing this hippity hop stuff. I didn't raise you this way, right? You know, she later came to appreciate it. And my pops was like, what are you doing to my records? You know, because I would just play the same. You know, I'm like, you need to play this record. You know, I ask him to buy me a record. And then I play just the one part. And I remember, it's like, wait a second. I paid like $14 for a damn record. I think it was Yellow Magic Orchestra or something. And I'm just wanted to play this one part over. And I'm like, you know, I need to get a tape recorder so I could play Kapoor's Button. But with that being said, did your mom or your pops, did they ever say, what the hell is this hip hop thing? Or because they were progressive in that world, were they the ones to say, I don't know about these other parents, but we embrace this?
I'm gonna be honest with you, I don't know that I shared a lot of that with them.
Really?
First of all, I'm still shy. People don't believe that because I'm constantly talking on the radio and on TV, but I'm actually shy, and I didn't want my parents to know I was rapping because I felt like they would judge me against the standard of their poetry or whatever. So I actually kept it to myself. And by the time they found out about it, it was like, oh, you have a TV show?
Okay. It was one of those things. Like, okay.
Yeah. Like, I got my first TV when I got my TV show because my mom didn't let me have a TV, right?
So, right.
The whole thing with Home Turf was like, oh, yeah, I'm in this now. And I remember one time we were at a jazz club with my mom in San Francisco, and somebody came up to me and said, oh man, I love your show, you know, Home Turf, blah, blah, blah. And my mom was looking because we were, you know, it was at her show. So we were expecting someone to come and ask for her autograph, and this person wanted to take a picture with me. And I think that's when it dawned on her that it was a serious thing in him. And, you know, that I was starting to create my own little world.
Okay, so it was never a thing of, they didn't know until until you'd already locked in.
Too late.
When you was able to go, I have a TV show. I don't know about you all, but I have a TV show. One of the things that we've also looked at is artists who have ascended, you know, to these heights that you wouldn't expect. So like your brother Ross or half brother, you know, Ross is the mayor, but he also had an album out. Did you all ever have hip hop moments? You know, you and any of your siblings?
I mean, technically all my siblings are halves, but I don't measure that way. They're right. my brothers and sisters. No, Raz and I never had a hip hop moment. He, you know, we were on different coasts.
Right.
He, you know, we ran in different circles. I've always been very proud of him. I raised money for his campaigns for mayor and whatever else he runs for, I'm going to be raising money for him. But we never had a hip hop moment. I mean, he's not the only one, by the way. Mitty, my brother Mitty, who's now the chief of staff for Raz, also, you know, is a rapper and a DJ. You know, we're word people.
So you all have this crew then.
Ha. Yeah.
You know, why couldn't there be the Baraka Da Primas, you know, clan versus the Wu-Tang? You know, there was never a thought to like, you know what, we should all, you know, do an album.
That would be more likely to happen in politics than hip hop.
Really? Like everybody just run for office at the same time?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know that I'll ever run for office, but it could happen. I'm just saying that seems more likely because all of us are also activists.
Right.
Even the ones that aren't into hip hop, you know, we've got all kinds of talent within the family and writers, you know, art historian. We've got filmmakers. We got so much talent, but they're all political. They all want to, you know, they're all part of the movement.
So let me ask you this. We're talking with Dominique Da Prima, looking back at her career. You've always brought that political edge, as you pointed out, and that's always been infused, and it's definitely opened doors. As I, say, like when I got into commercial radio, had it not been for your show in LA, we wouldn't have been able to do our show up here. You know, it set the template. Are you happy with the way that politics has unfolded with hip hop, whether it's with our generation or various others that have come before or after? Do you feel like something's been lost in the sauce, you know, that has kind of been put on the back burner, or do you think it's been on a good path?
Well, so it's funny you say it brings opportunities, because I feel like if anything, the fact that I've been steadfast in my political beliefs has actually closed a lot of doors for me in terms of commercial success.
But, really?
Yeah. But for me, it's worth it because I remember one time when I first came to LA, I called John Fromer, the producer of Home Turf, and I was like, what do I do? You know, because I was in a situation where this agent wanted to sign me, but they didn't like my politics. And he said, well, what's your option? You're going to be someone that you're not?
Mm.
And I was like, yeah, good point. Okay, thanks. Bye. That's when I realized I'm not that girl. So I do.
Well, for real, they did not like your politics, and they would hold that against
you. They end up not signing me. It was like, if you tone this down, you know, we can represent you. And this was one of the major agencies when I first came to LA. And so that's when I realized that I am who I am, and I'm not going to, you know, give myself cancer and ulcers by being somebody else. So I think it has closed some doors, but I'm okay with that. I think if you look at it in terms of hip hop, I think it goes in cycles, just like it does in our society, right?
Mm-hmm.
We as people are more engaged, and we're more progressive, and then we have backlash, and then we're more progressive and we have backlash. So I think hip hop is subject to that. I do think the hyper profitability of it has taken it now to where it's harder to get a message out or sustain a genuine kind of movement. Although on the flip side of that, you have some people with very deep pockets that are willing to step in certain situations and,
right.
You know, help with, you know, Black Lives Matter or, you know, Me Too or whatever it might be. And that's important. So I think the consciousness continues. And I do, you know, I don't know that back in the 80s or 90s, you would have seen someone at the level of a Beyonce.
Right.
Being as politically overt as she is. And I definitely credit that to hip hop, because I think hip hop has seeped into everything in terms of consciousness and what are you saying and what are you representing.
Right.
You know, but at the same time, you got all these folks mumbling and saying things that, you know, maybe mean something and maybe they don't. And
right.
So, you know, but that's not anything new. We've been through that cycle, I think, several times.
Real talk. And it's something that we got to kind of put in perspective. We got to allow some grace for that as well.
Yeah.
I think oftentimes people become real concerned. Well, why aren't you doing enough? And it's like, well, damn, you sat on your butt too for like 20 years and just allowed some things to slide.
Right. I mean, not only that, we need variety. This one thing that Paris always says that I agree with, the point is not that everybody has to be, you know, this militant. It's that we have to have variety. And the people that are conscious should also have access to the airwaves, just like the people with rainbow hair. You know, like we all should have, we should have a range.
Right.
And that's the goal. Not for everybody to be like me or everybody to be like you.
I appreciate that. So, you know, let me come back to this, talking with Dominique DePrima, talking about her history, the ground that she broke with her landmark show, Home Turf. Oftentimes we talk about the rappers, but you were very conscious, as you mentioned, to bring the DJ crews in, to bring the dancers in, to bring the graph artists in. And now we're looking at, you know, at least with two of those disciplines, they have ascended new heights. We just had the NAMM convention, thousands of people down there talking about DJs. You're in LA, that's a huge market for DJs with so many people, you know, in that area. And also the dancing that's now going to be in the Olympics next year. So any of the guests that you remember, I mean, to me, one of the pivotal shows that I remember was when you had King Tech, who actually straddles both worlds.
Right.
You know, we know King Tech as a DJ who's also scoring like a lot of movies and stuff, but he started off not as a DJ, but he was on your show with the San Francisco Ballet Breakers.
Yeah,
that's when I first heard.
That's right. I was the official rapper for that group.
For the Ballet Breakers?
Yeah.
Absolutely. No. You got to tell us about that. What was?
Absolutely. Yeah, we performed. We used to go around performing. In fact, I think our biggest job was when we opened for New Edition at the Circle Star Theater. King Tech was dancing on that show and I was rapping. I have pictures from that somewhere.
Wait a second. You were the official rapper for the San Francisco Ballet Breakers.
Yes, I was.
You keep a lot of stuff hidden.
I don't keep it hidden. I just be moving on. I'm a Gemini, David Yee. I don't sit there and go, back in the day when I, you know, was wearing a 3-inch mini skirt rapping for the San Francisco Ballet Breakers. Like, I'm on to the next thing. And God bless, you know, God bless it. I feel so much gratitude that there is a next thing, right?
Right.
When Home Turf was canceled, I went and thought up street signs because I thought I was going to get another TV show. It ended up being a radio show.
Mm.
I'm always thinking about what's next. And I have stacks of journals full of projects I want to do. Television projects, radio projects, book projects. So it's not that I hide stuff. I just be like, thank you, next.
Okay. I want to look back in this moment of you being the official rapper for the San. So first of all, many people don't know that there was the San Francisco Ballet Breakers. That's a history right. that we don't know.
Right.
And then when we do know it, we do know, you know, at least I know Tech was a part of that. And I know it because, you know, talk to Tech, but I first saw it on Home Turf.
Right.
But you didn't say when you did that show, oh, by the way, being the MC and you just interviewed Tech and
I don't remember not saying it, but I auditioned for that job. There were other rappers there. And
okay.
I got the job. And
did you beat out Too Short again or E-40?
No, I think by then he was on to his record deal and his multi-million dollar career. And
right.
I'm still on my multi-thousand dollar career. But no, it was an audition. I beat everyone else that auditioned were guys for sure.
Okay.
And maybe I had an advantage. Maybe they thought it was cute to have a girl. I don't know, but that was a job that I did. So I was at all those rehearsals. Mm-hmm. I traveled with those guys. They actually paid us pretty well. That was a pretty innovative project. The ballet company was giving those guys some training, but also giving them jobs. I mean, we performed at different things.
So were they able just to do the breaking, or did they have to incorporate some other?
No, they just did straight breaking. What they did at the San Francisco Ballet is they had the opportunity to take dance classes and learn about ballet. And as we know, football players now take ballet. I mean, ballet is actually helpful for many different disciplines, right. But they didn't try to make them dance ballet. No, they just did straight breaking. It's just that they would use the San Francisco Ballet studios to rehearse their routines, and I'd be there rapping along. They'd be working out their stuff. Some of them would have their linoleum with them or whatever, but then you'd get there and it'd be these beautiful floors. And
right. No need for linoleum with a studio like that.
Right. It was a collaboration. But they did all the choreography. The San Francisco Ballet was not imposing on them. They were just making space for them.
Where did you all travel to? I just thought it was local. I didn't know you traveled all over.
Just around the bay. It wasn't okay. We traveled out of state, but it was just around the bay. But they were probably like different, and I can't even remember all of them, to be honest with you, David. But they were opportunities we would not have had, because the San Francisco Ballet was using their clout to include breakdancing in various presentations, conferences, whatever.
So at that moment, did you ever think it would make it to the Olympics? Because we're talking about in the 80s when we're talking about the ballet breaking.
I mean, I told you every year those executives would say, well, this rap thing is about to play out. Let's shift. And John would look at me and say, is the rap thing about to play out? And I would say, no, the rap thing is not about to play out. And he would say, no, we're not going to shift. And then we would go away and they'd ask us again the next year.
Mm.
And I didn't think it was going to go away. I don't know why. I just didn't think it was. I know trends come and go, but I think, we were kind of in a wormhole. We were in a pop culture wormhole where we were able to just keep doing our thing.
Real talk. Do you, why did Home Turf get canceled? You know, did it just run its course or?
Yeah, I think it ran its course. I do. The station, the show ran, we did like over 200 episodes of Home Turf. It's not like it was a flash in the pan. I think the show ran its course. They were ready to wrap it up. It was crazy because we had the civil unrest. We were still shooting.
This was because we were talking civil unrest because it was around the time of the Rodney King uprisings,
Right. So 92, we were still filming. And so when the show was finally canceled, and people say it ended in 92, I guess, because that's when we stopped filming. But the episodes were airing into 93.
Right.
That's when I left and moved to L.A. I was like, oh, don't have a job. Go to where the food is. Put my stuff in a U-Haul and took off. But I do think the show ran its course. It had a really good run.
How did you feel when shows like Yo MTV Raps got on, PET is starting to show up, and then right across the bay from San Francisco where you were at, we did have Soul Beat. I don't know if you I don't know if you guys ever sat down and talked or chopped it up, but when you started to see these other shows pop up, and they get this national exposure, did you feel a certain way? Did you feel like, I should be up there with Fab Five Freddy and them? Because you were doing it for years before they showed up.
Well, here's the thing. Big props to Soul Beat. We never collaborated, but I knew of their existence. And we were fans of each other. Let me put it out. As far as the national recognition of hip hop and stuff and the TV shows going on, I didn't feel a way because I am a fan of the culture. So I was happy to see people getting opportunities, happy to see doors opening and more recognition. Sometimes I do feel some kind of way when people don't give me credit for what I actually did. And I know that when you're a pioneer, oftentimes you don't get the big checks.
Right.
I feel like what my blessings have my name on them. If it's for me, you can't get it. If it's not for me, I can't get it. So I don't live in that kind of resentment space. What I don't like recently, I had that clip of Tupac from Listen Up, and I just was keeping it because I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll do a documentary. Who knows? I'll use it for something. So someone posted on the internet. It goes everywhere.
Right.
And people are cutting me out of it.
Oh, yeah.
My name out of it. Not giving me. Now that I do feel a way about.
Right. And they did that with the Nipsey Hussle interview I did.
Yeah. I've put several people on blast. That's wrong. That is. It's
thievery. Because it's your intellectual property in terms of how you directed the conversation.
Right.
And all that.
Nipsey wasn't sitting there by himself talking to himself. He was talking to Davey D. And that's what we do for a living. So don't cut me out. I mean, I don't like that at all. If you want to talk about feel away, you can do home turf, the son of home turf, or the son of street knowledge or whatever.
Right.
Fine. Good luck with that. Hope it works out for you. But don't come take my stuff. Do not do that.
Right. I hear you on that. And for good reason. Too much erasure, too much overlooking.
Right, and especially as a Black woman. Like, y'all didn't even, like, y'all wasn't even up on hip hop. And we were part of it. And now y'all want to act like Black women haven't been there. Now you're just going to go ahead and erase me? And use that to get likes on your site? What? Yeah. Really? No, I don't think so.
I hear you on that. So, you know, as we close out, Dominique, first of all, let me just say thank you because, you know, it can't be understated. You did open up a lot of doors, whether it was intended or not. The existence of that show was tremendous. And it gave us, gave all of us, I think, who got on that show a certain amount of profile, whether it was locally, you know, or people who might have been traveling through and seeing it. Because it wasn't, the cool thing about Home Turf was it wasn't on in the middle of the night.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was prime time.
Yeah.
And because it was prime time, and even when you started doing street signs down in LA, because it was in prime time, it was the reason why a public affairs show in other places were able to be like, why are you going to put us at 6 a.m? They get to do, you know what I mean? So it was a blueprint to be like, well, if it's here, then we might as well try and replicate or do something similar. So we're able to get that prime time thing because of it. So thank you for that. With that being said, you know, I'm going to let you get the last word. You know, what are you checking for hip hop wise? Or, you know, is there any music, any trends? You know, did you complete everything on your bucket list since you said you have an array of projects in your journals? You know, how far complete are you? You only got one or two more things to do. What's the deal?
I'm just getting started, Davey D. I got a lot more things to do. You know what? I there was intention behind opening doors for people. That's something that John Fromer did intentionally for me, and that I intentionally do for other people that I still do. One of the things that I feel really good about is the fact that I have people that have come through my show, whether it be Home Turf, Street Science, Front Page, or First Things First, which is my show now.
Right.
Weekdays on KBLA Talk 1580. Get the app. But it's that I have people trained up that I've trained in media everywhere.
And right.
I feel good about that. I like putting people on. I'm proud of the fact, even if I don't get credit, for being the first person in the whole country to play Bone Thugs on the radio, because Easy came to me and said, hey, put this on.
Right.
I was like, this sounds crazy. But then I grew to love it, right? And so I love doing that. I love opening doors. And I hope to keep doing it. And I, you know, I'm not in the clubs and in the streets like I used to be. So I might not see you coming, but shoot, hit me up, because I still love doing that. And I will probably always love doing that, whether it be for an artist, whether it be for a journalist, you know, or whatever you might be doing. That's something that I really love doing, and I will continue to do that.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, I just had Madison McFerrin on my show last week. She's amazing. She's her album.
What? She's dope.
She's super dope. But her album comes out May 12th. Like, and I felt super happy to be able to put her on blast in LA, you know, right. And I know everyone's going to be getting on the bandwagon, but I mean, that's just a, not that I'm not saying I break music. I'm not saying that at all. I'm right. saying I love opening doors for talented people, whatever. You could be a carpenter. You could be a musician. You could be an activist. That's something that I hope I'll be doing, you know, as long as I'm on a mic.
And that's the spirit, you know, each one teach one and reach out, you know, to the people behind you as the people in front of you reach out and pull you up. That's what we got to do for each other.
Yep, absolutely. And Dominic, thank you. Thank you for always being on the mic. Thank you for always having smart, important things to say. And thank you for taking my calls and doing whatever. It's radio, TV, whatever crazy right. show I'm doing, a stage show that I call you at the last minute. Hey, Dave, can you do this? I really appreciate you having my back.
No doubt. I appreciate that. How do people get a hold of you?
I'm on Instagram at Deprima Radio, D-I-P-R-I-M-A, and then radio. Same on Twitter. I'm on Instagram more than Twitter, though. And right. I'm on Facebook. I have a YouTube channel, Deprima Radio, Facebook, First Things First with Dominique Deprima. I'm everywhere.
There you go. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. Chuck D.